Blog Talk Radio.
And hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition, another edition of the Going Old School show. Chips and Crow here for you. Joe's taking some personal business, but he'll resume our conversation and our sharing of our thoughts probably next week sometime. But it is June 1st of year 2022. If you want to join us, as we welcome you each and every show, you can at 515-602-9730. Once again, that's 515-602-9730. Mr. Crow, thank you for your time. How are you on this fine evening?
Doing well. Happy hump day.
Happy hump day to you. And for the record, right now, it is warmer in Anchorage, Alaska, than it is here in southeastern Massachusetts. So be that as it may, I don't think there's any snow in the forecast, but 64 balmy degrees here and a lovely 69 degrees up in the lovely state of Alaska. But we will digress as we get a lot to talk about in this next hour. Obviously, we have some baseball, what's going on with the Boston Red Sox. We'll have our top five power rankings. If you want to touch on hockey, we can, but that's not necessarily. But it is an exciting Final Four in the NHL. But we are going to start off with we planning on going, and that is the NBA Finals, JC, and the Boston Celtics survived. And we can recap that game a little bit and kind of talk about, you know, the final match, the NBA Finals, the 75th version of the NBA Finals beginning on Thursday against the Golden State Warriors out in the Bay Area in San Francisco. But your thoughts, they got over the hump. You know, we talked about in the past in our shows, Tatum's been to two, Brown and Smart have been to three. I mean, and they had to get to this point, we thought, going in, and they did, JC. Your thoughts?
Yeah, first and foremost, you know, as they used to say back in the day, it's not how you get there, it's that you get there. And, hey, it might have been an ugly last 3 minutes and 38 seconds in South Beach, but damn it, they survived. I don't care how they did. They got over the hump, as you said, and it's on to the NBA Finals for that core group. Give them all the kudos in the world. And, yes, we will get into that 3 minutes and 38 turned into the biggest choke job in NBA history. Mm-hmm. But for now, I am happy for them. They looked a blow-up in the face in December, in the beginning of January.
Yep.
Took a good look in the mirror and decided it was worth it to fight for each other. And now they're four wins away from Banner 18.
Exactly. And you talked about Banner 18 and the way they've done it. And I think we hit on that as well. I know I have, and I think you and Joe have as well on our shows in the past. But this is one of the biggest turnarounds that I can remember mid-season by any of the teams in this area. But like you said, they were hovering on the brink of not making the playoffs at all, maybe making the play-in, what's going to happen, dissension, what's going on in the clubhouse, the locker room. It was all unraveling, and we were just waiting and saying, it's Ime Udoka. I mean, I think I was questioning at one point, does he realize what he's gotten into, and is he regretting taking over this head coaching position with the Celtics because of the dysfunction? But they turned it around, and it seemed like it was at the drop of a hat. They did it. And they're on a remarkable run, the best basketball in the second half. Right, you know, say what you want about the way it ended or the way the game seven ended. We'll discuss that. It's been 12 years, and they've done a really good job. And hats off to the organization and the team.
It's funny because one of the things that does drive you crazy about this team, you know, we talked a lot about killer instincts and, you know, having that emotion, that aggressiveness. It's actually one of the things that has really helped them because you look at, you know, what Jason Tatum at the podium after they lose game six at home. Mm-hmm. Ask him point blank, what's your confidence going to South Beach? He's like, 10 out of 10.
Yep.
Game seven, we got to win one game. I'm confident in me. I'm confident in my group. And they went out there and won wire to wire. Now, did they go back into those patterns of close and clutch and, you know, try to slow it up and basically almost cough up a 13-point lead with 3:38 left, if not for a Jimmy Butler three-point miss? Abso-freaking-lutely.
Yep.
And they have to look themselves again in the eye and say, listen, you can afford to do that against the Miami Heat and get away with it. Because
mm-hmm.
you built that lead. You do that against the Golden State Warriors, you're going to lose not only lose, but you're going to lose by 5 and 6 because Curry and Thompson and Draymond Green and Poole and Wiggins will launch threes on their ass in the final 338 if that situation comes up again. So, you know, it's kind of like the Belichick thing. You got the win, but you're still a little bit angry about something going to the next step. That's what Ime has on his plate going into game one tomorrow.
And I think as a Celtics fan, you got to be concerned about that because, like you said, they can't afford to do this and have these great games and non-shooting. They've got to be way more consistent than they've been through this playoff run because the Golden State Warriors are right there waiting for them with, you know, talent all the way up and down the bench. So we can't see the Celtics get into that sort of relaxed mode or just kind of whatever you want to call it, the malaise, if you will, for lack of a better term, or to put it in one word, JC. And we saw that at the final 3 minutes. And my first thought, question to you is, I mean, Marcus Smart taking the final 5 shots, I mean, that to me is a little disconcerting, and that can't happen again. But every time we say they right the ship, and I like what Marcus Smart brings to the table defensively, but why does that keep happening? And who's responsible for it? Is it coaching? Is it the players? Is it a mixture of both? Because that should not have happened. And sometimes we, as the team progresses and they play better, we always see them that ugly head rear at the rear view again.
Yeah, and to answer your question, yes, yes, and yes. It's on the player, it's on Ime, and it's on both of them. Because I know they got the philosophy. You know, if Tatum's not going to take the shot, and he, you know, he's the guy that, you know, last couple of games in the fourth quarter, not taking shots. You know, him and Brown combined for 2 field goals in the fourth quarter in game 6, and then Tatum only 4 field goals in game 7, fourth quarter. He did his job by getting the ball to the open guy. Smart in those scenarios has to be smart enough to put up a fake, drive to the hole, get a foul, get an easy shot. Just launching 3 3-pointers is not going to get it done.
Mm-hmm. John Crow, Johnny Sinchips here on the Going Old School Show on blogtalkradio.com. Once again, if you want to join us, you can at 515-602-9730. We're live on blogtalkradio.com. We'll get into some baseball later on in the show, but the NBA Finals begin Thursday at Golden State. And JC, you're looking at 2 teams as you move on from, you know, the Eastern Conference Finals. And again, kudos to the Celtics and for the Warriors for that matter. And Taylor, 2 different teams. One team looking for the 18th banner, 17-4 historically in the finals. It's nothing to shimmy at. And the Golden State Warrior team that is doing something that's really interesting, JC. You know, 6th conference final, appearing finals for the 6th time in 8 seasons, looking for the 4th title since 2015. But you're looking at a team now, a couple of years ago, when they had a lot of injuries, they could have kind of sold out and gone, you know, maybe rebuilt a little bit, but they stuck with some of the core guys. Thompson's back after 2-year absence, and they're deep. And are we looking at a Golden State Warrior team that can kind of do this again, if you will, make this sort of run and kind of revisit this dynasty?
Yeah, no question. And you mentioned it 2 years ago. They had the number one pick, you know, and, you know, they had all the injuries, you know, especially with Thompson going down and Curry getting hurt. Draymond Green hurt for a good majority of that season as well. And, you know, Celtics and Warriors built very similarly. Half of their roster homegrown through the draft, and then the rest primarily by trades. So, you know, kudos to both organizations to getting it done and not just throwing money for free agents. You know, and it's amazing that you look at these two teams, and when you go look, like you said, 2 years ago, things look drastically different, you know, with both of these franchises. And now if you look at it forward, you can honestly say that these are the two teams in each conference that could go on that run. And yes,
right.
I dare say the Celtics could do it without winning the first for Tatum, Brown, and Smart, but they absolutely could because they have the wherewithal to do it. And it just seems to me they're going to be one of those franchises. I won't say like the Bulls, but it took learning. Look at all those Eastern Conference teams in the 80s. The Celtics had to get over the hump. Then the Pistons had to get over the hump of the Celtics. And then, the Pistons, you know, they were the ones that the Bulls had to get over. So it was that constant thing. And now, it's, for the past couple of years, it's been the heat for the Celtics that they had to get over. And they've done it. And so now we look at a series against the Warriors. And let me ask you this, Chips.
Mm-hmm.
The styles that we're going to see, the biggest difference do you think the Celtics are going to have to face going from the physicality of the East with Miami and Milwaukee the past couple of series to facing this Warriors team?
First and foremost, I think the Celtics are going to have to take the mentality of the Miami physicality and display that against Golden State. Because you can shut down Curry, and I'll tell you right now, Curry can score, but he can facilitate as well. And if you can shut him down, and that's where Marcus Smart is big with this. I think they're going to have to adopt that physicality and mentality and beat him up a little bit and get him off their game, at least frustrate him. That's how I see this series shaking out. And I think if the Celtics are to win, and they are the better defensive team, Golden State is good, but they're not the Celtics caliber. The height of on the inside with the Time Lord and the physicality and the defense is going to have to be stellar, and not less than stellar, to beat Golden State. If the Celtics do not play defensively strong throughout every game, 48 minutes, they're not winning the series. It's that simple to me. They've got to be physical, take fouls, and just to be able to withstand it, because they're going to be, that's a deep, deep team. They'll come off the bench, and this kid Jordan Poole is, it's the deepest team they're going to play, you're going to have to wear them down physically and get them off the game mentally. It's that simple.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's going to seem odd for me to say this, but I actually think Daniel Tice is a factor in this series, just because the Celtics, with the combination of Horford and Rob Williams, who will get a couple of extra days of rest now because the series has those built-in, 2 days rest instead of the, every other day because it's the NBA Finals and what the TV wants and what the travel schedule wants. But you can use Daniel Tice in those 5 to 10 minute spurts. Give Rob a little lift because he was hurting at the end of that Heat series. There's no doubt. If he was 60% at the end of that series, I'd be shocked. But getting the rest now and getting a couple of days before Game 2 will help them. And that's the one of the things. Yes, the Warriors shoot the daylights out of the ball. But if they're not on at peak level, the Celtics should be able to pound the ball and get out in transition against this Warriors team. And that's, they made hay that first quarter against Miami with 13 fast break points. I look for them to do the same thing, because if they think they're just going to match them with 53 pointers, that's a recipe for disaster, because I think we're looking at a series that's going to be decided in the last 4 minutes of each and every game. And we're not going to have those wild 25-point swings in every game like we did against the Heat.
Right. Lou's on hold. Lou, hold on a minute. We're going to get a couple more thoughts, and we'll bring you into the show. Thanks for holding. JC, John Crow, and Johnny Sunchips here on the Golden Old School podcast on Blog Talk Radio. JC, you talked about you can't get into that three-point shooting challenge and that three-point shooting contest, but is that something that Celtics can be disciplined enough to get away from? Because we've seen it. They're going to shoot the rock, and at times they have to shoot the rock and be successful from the outside, meaning three-point range, to be successful. Are they going to have to change their game up a little bit and go more inside against this team to establish that presence in order to open things up?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of having that mindset early in games where, yes, when they drive the ball and they kick it, it's usually not that first pass that gets it done. It's that second and third that gets you the better shot. And when they're in that mode, that's when they're at their peak level. They have to be wary of is adjusting on the fly when they start some of these games like they have been, and they go 1 from 7, 2 for 10 from the outside, and they know it's not there right at the beginning. You can't allow yourself to build a 12, 14-point first quarter lead, deficit against the Warriors. It's going to be a hard time getting out. You can grind it out just because you're that good defensively against the Milwaukees and the Brooklyns and the Miamis of the world. The Warriors are completely on the other animal. If they smell blood, they're going to bury it.
Yeah, Yeah, they will. Let's bring in Lou from New Jersey, who joined us here each and every week. Lou, you're on with John and John.
Thanks.
How are you, buddy? What's going on?
All right, guys. Well, it's here.
What's up, Lou?
One of the finals. It's here. At last. Well,
Go ahead, Lou.
Most people, I think, are going to take the Warriors in this series. I mean, now you got Klay Thompson back, and that's the secret weapon right there. If the Celtics are going to have any chance, they got to, you know, outplay them, and they got to not fall behind so much early, because the more they're going to do that, the more it's going to be tougher to catch up, because you've seen what happened, you know, like in Game 4 with Miami, or Game 5, rather, and they were so far behind, they were trying to catch up, and Miami was just too strong for them. So they got to play defensively and defensively smart if they're going to have any chance at all to win this series, because the way I see it, I don't think it's going to happen.
Who do you like in how many games?
I'm going to say the Warriors. I'm going to say in 5.
What do you think, JC?
I'm going to ride all the way to the finals here. Celtics in 7, winning banner 18 in the final moments of Game 7.
In San Francisco. That'll be interesting. I originally had, and I think I thought the Golden State would beat Miami or the Celtics in 5 before the series even started, before the matchup was even done. But then I said to myself, okay, Celtics are a better team than Miami, but I'm going to take the Golden State Warriors in 6. I just think it's their time, and I think they're going to get it done. And, guys, I'm going to say one thing, and Celtic fans, again, it happened with Giannis. Golden State's going to get calls if it comes down to refereeing. I mean, it always does. I hope it doesn't. I hope it doesn't reflect the outcome of games like we've seen, because you guys, I'll start with you, and Lou, you call basketball games are turning into football games. By that I mean every football game you see after the final whistle blows, it's like, okay, you revert back to a call that a referee made. And that's what you're seeing with the NBA now. And I think it's a major, major problem moving forward when we're talking about referees and missed calls and blown calls and missed replay calls in the NBA playoffs. I think that's a bad sign. Lou, your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, that's nothing new. I mean, referees have been making wrong calls in the game for years, especially in the playoffs. I mean, most of the time when Jordan was there, the game, the call was to Jordan anyway. You know, just like that. So it's nothing new. I mean, it'll probably happen again. I mean, if it gets the wrong call, you know, I think it's going to go. But I shouldn't say in this case, because both teams, have had great players and great teams. Now in Boston, of course, you know, was the king at one time. They've won 17 titles. So, but the reps play dumb. I think they will give most of the calls to the Warriors. I've seen refs make wrong calls before, and it's not right. You know, you're supposed to handle this professionally. And, you know, not play favorites.
I agree.
You know, make the call and make the call right, you big dope.
I agree.
The next charge block call they get right will be the first.
All right, Lou, where can people hear you? I know you're doing a podcast out there. Tell people where they can reach you.
Yeah, it's okay. It's called The Enhanced Sports Show. We're on Saturdays, 5 to 7 p.m. East Coast time. Nothing has changed. The time and number are still the same. Somebody thought I changed my date last week. No, I did not. So just keep that in mind. It's Saturday, 5 to 7 p.m. East Coast time. No joke. Yes, we will cover the NBA finals. We'll cover the NHL conference finals. My Rangers are still in this. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Baseball standings we'll cover. We'll look at the French Open women's finals of this week. A wild day in auto racing on Sunday. The Indy 500 and the Pepsi Cola 600. I mean the Coca-Cola 600. I wish it was Pepsi. And if there's any college baseball fans out there, I'm going to try my best to do a little bit of a college baseball tournament, which is happening on Friday. So we'll go through the remainder of what's left and give your opinion on that. I know it's not for everybody, but if you have any takes on it, please call. Remember again, 512.
Go ahead. Sorry, Luke.
Say it again.
No,
512-543-4662. So I hope you get a chance to call it. Thanks.
Lou, thanks, man.
Thanks, Lou.
Spanning the globe on the Enhanced Sports Podcast is Lou from New Jersey. JC, I want to hop in back on something. Lou, thanks for the call. About the refereeing and the call to arms of the referees seemingly in and out of these games and after and before, is there a serious problem in the NBA now where we're looking at the officiating kind of coming into so much scrutiny where we're going to have instant replay on flopping and all these calls, and we're going to see these games go a little bit longer clock time in the future? And how big of a problem is this for the NBA ongoing?
Yeah, it's huge, you know. And now if you add in that they're going to go back 3 minutes in a game like they did, you know, in game seven to turn around a three-pointer by Strus, you know, which they made the red call. I mean, he was out of bounds.
Yep.
But the way they did it and announced it, probably not handled it, you know, exactly how they would want for a game seven. But, I'm a big proponent of Jeff Van Gundy on ABC. He's absolutely right. These referees have no idea what a charge or a block is and how to let guys play, because every single time you could call a push-off, especially with Brown and Tatum on the Celtics, they do it more than anybody else. Giannis does it for the Bucks. You know, everybody does it. Should you be calling it as much as you do? Probably not. How about we just let the ball, you know, the guys play a little bit? I mean, I'm sure if you ask any NBA player from the 80s, they would laugh at what the sport has become right now as far as officiating, because it's just crazy. Nobody wants to see NBA players shoot 30 free throws in a half. That's what happened the other night.
No, in the game down. Slow and slow the game if you're a player. You have to do it. I mean, you know, it's like old school basketball in the 80s with the Knicks and some of those, you know, games ending like 82-80. I mean, it was okay, but we look back now and with the game and as high scoring as it's been in the past few years, we realize that we don't want to go back to those days anymore. And if you slow in the game down, it becomes less of an attraction, at least aesthetically. And I'm looking at with the with what's going on, but because there's been a lot of bad games here, a lot of blowouts in the NBA playoffs, and I'm looking forward to, hopefully, as they knock on wood here, a competitive and good final. But one last thing before we move on to baseball. You know, you look at the Celtics and you look at the game on Thursday night, and to me, I think it's imperative that they get out to a really good start, a good first half, for this reason only. I mean, talk about experience, JC. You know, the Golden State Warriors have had at least over 100 games of finals experience on the roster. The Celtics have had zero. That is a big factor, in my opinion. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree with you. The one caveat, though, is it's the top three in Curry, Thompson, and Green.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of them, nobody else on that Warrior roster has played in the NBA Finals. So they're going to be in spots that they're unfamiliar with as well. But, you know, obviously with Steph and Draymond and Clay, you know, that's a lot of experience right there. And I agree with you. It's important for the Celtics to play well in game one. I don't think it's a must win that they take game one. It would be nice to take one of the first two, because you never want to go down 2-0 in an NBA final.
No.
But especially now that we've gone back to the 2-2-1-1-1 format instead of the 2-3-2 format, when if you were the road team and you took one of the first two and then came home for your three, man, was that an advantage. But, you know, I agree with you 100%. To play well, stay in the game, and have a chance to win in the fourth quarter, that's your goal for game one.
I agree. Looking forward to a real good series. And you know what? And if you're a Boston Celtic fan or a Boston fan, you know what? You're playing basketball now for a couple weeks in June, hopefully. So that's a good thing, and it kind of's going to lead us into what we're talking about next. And we're going to do a power rankings in a minute, but we got to start with this Boston Red Sox team and the ebb and flow, which is incredible with this team, and these glaring weaknesses would seem to rear their ugly heads, JC. And I'm going to start it off. And you know, you talked about the Red Sox. And I got to look through my notes because I had a little spiel I wanted to go on. You know, 23-27, 5-5 in their last 10, 11.5 games out. We can right now stop about any thoughts of division titles. 12-14 in the friendly confines of Fenway. But you look at not too long ago, just before the Memorial Day weekend, you know, they put up 216 run burgers against the Chicago White Sox, won that series 2-3, which I would think there was that at the time their fourth or fifth series in a row. In come Baltimore and Cincinnati to Boston, two last place teams. Granted, they're both playing well. The Reds started off horribly. They're playing better. Baltimore is not the pushover that they were, they're not the 100-loss team that they were the past couple of seasons. So you say, okay, better teams should win. The Sox lose tonight. They are one. We are that loss away from 2-5 against the Orioles and the Cincinnati Reds. And I am not feeling too good about that. And I know you have thoughts on it and the glaring weaknesses that keep rearing their ugly head with this team.
Yeah, it's the damn inconsistency. You know, you're coming off the road. You're feeling really, really good about yourself. A couple of 16 burgers in Chicago. You know, and even in the middle game, you lose 3-1 on a three-run mm-hmm. home run off Rich Hill. You know, you did a decent job. Just one bad pitch there. You know, one bad inning. You could have swept the White Sox. But you come home, you put up an 8-2 lead after six. Garrett Whitlock on the mound. You're feeling amazing about yourself. And then the bullpen comes in and 10 runs given up to the Orioles when you lose 12-8. And you talk about tough. You're trying to rebound with a scheduled doubleheader with, a major league debut in the nightcap. It's like you're putting yourself behind the eight ball because you know you're not sweeping that doubleheader. Just
right.
Not happening. You had your chances to win the nightcap after a complete game Nathan Eovaldi victory, 5-3 in the opener, but your offense just didn't give you the chance. Your studs didn't come through in the eighth and ninth. You know, similar thing to last night. You know, you're down 2-0. Walker pitches a gem again. You give up 2 unearned runs on errors by Devers and Bogert. But here you go, bottom of the ninth. Hernandez hit. Devers hit. You got second and third, nobody out. You're feeling good about yourself. You've got your studs coming up. And you can't get it in. You basically get a run on an error, and Story strikes out to end the game, and you lose 2-1. And this is just, you know, I tweeted this out the other, you know, last night. They remind me of the December Celtics. You see adversity, if they run, they shudder. They pee down their legs. And I just don't understand it when you've got guys like Devers, like Bogert, like J.D. Martinez, Hernandez, Story, veterans on this team. Vasquez has had a great week. Plawecki. These are veteran guys who should not let teams come into Fenway Park and do what they've been doing.
Yep.
And it just I don't know how they get out because their general manager just does not seem to want to help them. And it's three areas they need help in. They need a first baseman who can catch the damn ball and hit about 250. Daubach and Franchy Cordero. Hey, I give Franchy, figured out you're hitting, but you should not be learning first base at the major league level. And Daubach's horrible defensively. So you've screwed yourself at least three wins this year with that. You have no offensive right-handed platoon for Jackie Bradley in right field. And then the most important thing, you don't have a closer, a legitimate closer who you can say, here's the ninth inning every time we have a lead. And that has led you down this path of we don't know what to do with Whitlock. We don't know what to do with Houck. We're keeping Walker and Hill still in the rotation because Stahel and Paxton are still hurt.
Yep.
So it's kind of self-inflicted here, and the GM just doesn't really feel the need to uninflict it, which is troubling.
I agree with you, and that's where it starts with the GM. The problems that you just said, they knew there was a closer situation at the end of last year, and they knew it going into this year. First base we knew was a problem. Schwarber was there. We thought he'd be the answer. They thought he'd resign him. No. The glaring need is still there. They did not address it. It's solely on the organization, be it Heinblum, if he's getting the okay again from John Henry, who I still want to hear from Mr. Henry, because what are you doing? Is Hein running the show? Is someone else running the show with him? Is he got the keys to the car? Is he shotgunning with somebody else? I really want to hear from John Henry, although he probably won't. But that's solely on the organization. They knew what they needed. They didn't address it. There's a guy with the Philadelphia Phillies who are 13 games out of first as we speak here today named Kyle Schwarber. Go out and get him if you have to. Seriously. But my point being, they didn't address that need, and that's what kicks me off. Because you're looking at front, you figured it out. Bobby Dalbec is what he is. He'll do his best Jack Clark impersonation and hit 25 homers, right? And look like he's had a great season when it'll all be backloaded in the second half. And I like Bobby Dalbec, but we may be looking at the fact that he is what he is because he still comes up with runners on base and he still is getting beat. He hasn't adjusted to where we thought he would. Can that still happen? Maybe. I just don't think it's going to happen in a Boston uniform. So right now, your first baseman in Dalbec and Cordero are not your first baseman of the future. And that's solely on the organization, Jason.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, Bloom was heralded as the guy who, you know, he can pull the strings. He's not attached to anybody. You know, he'll make the moves when necessary. Bobby Dalbec was there for the taking. Good end of August. Really good September. It was there. Tell him at his peak, go get a prospect someplace. Go get a bag of balls. And then go sign a Schwarber, a Freeman, you know, or somebody, anybody who can give you that time. Because then you can move those guys. And then when Tristan Cassius is ready, not going to be this year, may not be next year. But he'll be here within 3 years. So, I mean, I think they honestly hoped that, hey, let's get us to July. Let's be competitive till July. Cassius will be ready. We'll have Sale back. That'll be in the rotation. We'll be okay. Something will hash itself out with the bullpen. They'll get it figured out. And you know what? You just can't throw away 3 and 4 months of the season. And that's essentially what they've done.
Yeah.
And what's troubling to me is, they're 7-14 against the American League East.
That's
they don't have a winning record against anybody in the entire division. And that's troublesome because look at what you're facing once you get to July. It's a ton of the Yankees. It's a ton of the Rays, a ton of the Blue Jays. And, oh, yeah, the team that just, you know, whooped your butt over the weekend. The Orioles come back to haunt you. So it's... It may be too late, and going back to what you said about John Henry, every day that goes by that he doesn't say anything makes me just wonder that he just wants to get to the end of this year and write off all those large contracts with Nathan Eovaldi, J.D. Martinez, Xander Bogaerts, and say, you know what, go do what you did in Tampa and go run my team for $80 million. And if you think empty seats are in vogue right now, you wait till Red Sox Nation sees that, and that place will be a parking lot.
No question about it. I mean, that's something that you just can't do in Boston. And we talked about, and I talked about Theo Epstein having that great balance of putting a winner on the field and building a farm system. And that's what you need to do in this market. It's just the bottom line. It may be for any big market in that matter, but definitely here in Boston, we've seen it mastered to the fact that we won a couple world championships with Theo. I mean, that's just, he did it perfectly. I don't know why, I don't know how, but to me, he did it perfectly. And Chaim Bloom has not shown that he's even going to do that. Is he getting the carte blanche to do that? And it's just not going to wash. And it makes you wonder, JC, if what you're saying is true about Henry, and that could very well be the case, are we looking at maybe the final couple of years of owning the team, and maybe he saw, and if he does, maybe it's time in the next couple of years to do so?
Yeah, I'm surprised he hasn't sold already. But, you know, now that he's, you know, I think he just gets bored, you know. He wanted to get them a title. They won 4. So he's like, yeah, all right, I'll go buy a soccer team. They weren't doing that well. They got better. So, you know, he got bored with them too. So he bought himself a hockey team. He's going to have them play at Fenway Park against the Bruins on New Year's Day. You know, he's a billionaire. He gets bored. You know, I just wish that he would just come out and say, no, I told Chaim Bloom he has an open checkbook.
Yep.
Put it out there for him. Put the onus on you. You know, he has no attachment to Chaim Bloom.
No, of course.
You know, if he's the one that's not spending the money, it's the owner's responsibility to say, hey, it's not about me. I got an open checkbook for this team. I'll go to the end of the earth to give you who you want. The scary thing I see about this team is you've got Devers, Martinez, and Bogarts all hitting over 320, and this team is still, you know, four games under 500.
Right.
What happens a month from now if the trend continues? What's going to stop, you know, Bogarts from just walking into Chaim Bloom's office and say, yeah, no amount of money at the end of the year is going to keep me here.
Right.
So start the bidding process.
No question.
That'd
and you look at JD. Go ahead, John.
That'd be a bad time for this team because once that locker room sees that, a guy that wants to be here, guy who would take a fair contract to be the face of your franchise, a great guy in the locker room, great guy in public, it's John Lester all over again.
No question. And again, and I think what they did to Xander when they lowballed Xander has lasting effects in that clubhouse for the rest of the year. I really do. Because if you're in the organization, if you're Trevor Story, you may be wondering what you got into. You're going to get your money. I get it. But if you're Devers, if you're young players, I mean, if you're anyone in the know and sees what they're doing, again, like you said, the John Lester situation brought up to a team, you know, to a player that's been in their system since he was 17 years old, for God's sake, and Xander Bogaerts, and he took a friendly contract several years ago, and now he's due money, and he's proven he's worth it, and you're lowballing him again. I mean, there's no question to me that does not sit well with players around there, and if you're looking at Boston as a destination, you are thinking twice about it, guys. I mean, granted, you're winning, and John Henry spent a lot of money in the past. He's opened his wallets before, and it's paid off. But this, again, is, I think, a big, big reason why they may be floundering. And the more they lose, the more this thing is magnified, JC.
Yeah, and think about it. Say the Celtics do beat the Warriors in the NBA Finals. How much more pressure does that put on them and also the Patriots to get that next one, to be competitive the rest of the way here? You know, I'd love to see it, you know, not only because I'm a Celtics fan, I want them to win, but that's kind of what you need. You need them to keep putting pressure on the other organizations in town. You know, the Patriots, we know, is just a freaking train wreck as to what Belichick's doing with the coaching staff, you know. But the Red Sox, they have the audience to themselves in 2 weeks. Is anyone going to care at that point?
Good point. I mean, you're right. They are fun to watch offensively. And J.D. Martinez is Boston the shuffle. I mean, Trevor Story had himself a couple weeks. But what Martinez is doing right now is otherworldly. He's hitting .363, on base percentage of .425, and slugging at a .563 clip. He is ripping the cover off the ball to an OPS .88. What he's doing, J.C., we talk because they're not winning, is really under the microscope, the tear that he's been on recently. And that's a softball being thrown up to him.
Yeah, let me ask you this. All right, let's play devil's advocate here. They hang on to win Friday night against the Orioles. They come back to win last night. They sit at 25-25. Mm-hmm. How are you feeling about this team?
A lot better. A lot better because of the wins, because of the way they're trending. I mean, you talk about two wins, but those two wins bring them up to 500, and that's where you want to get to. When you're as far back 10 games plus of 500 as they were, that's where you go, okay, guys, let's get to 500. We're even, clean slate. Let's start winning some ball games. They haven't gotten there yet. They've had chances to do it, and they should have done it over the course of the past five, six games. I feel a lot better about them.
It's amazing, isn't it? Just that little bit of difference can make you feel so much better, and you reach a benchmark. You're absolutely 100% true, and you're right. That benchmark being reached after an abysmal April and a tough start to the May month, you win those two games, you're feeling pretty good about yourself. You win tonight, you go over 500 heading out west. You're facing another bad team in the Oakland A's this weekend. Maybe you get a few more games over 500. by simply not being able to close out that game Friday night and
yep.
not having your studs come through in the clutch last night, you feel like, oh, crap, they could lose and get swept by the woeful Reds and then go out west and lose like 7 out of 9. It's just
yeah.
the mentality of your outlook changes completely.
Classes in session here on the Old School Show. Chips and Crow here for you on this Wednesday, the 1st of June, 2022. Got about 15 minutes left in the show. We'll get to our power in just a moment. But, you know, you talk about the Oakland A's being a bad team, but there are no easy victories. So whether they play a bad team or a good team, there's nothing sure about this Red Sox team. But a 10-game, 10-day West Coast swing, I don't care how good or bad teams are, that's always a tough nut because it is – That's going to be tough sledding. An Angel team that's, you know, bruised a bit lately, losing 5 or 6 in a row. I think it's at least 5 in a row, but dangerous or a dangerous Angel team. Seattle's up and coming, and the Oakland A's. That's no easy task to go 10 games out west in the span of 10 days, they say.
I'll give you this. Answer this. Over, under, or equal, the amount of fans at the A's-Red Sox series – in 3 games, over, under, equal, 6 Warriors game 1 tomorrow night.
Wow. I've got to go. Wow. That's a tough one. We should be talking over because it's joking about the series. But I'm gonna go, and I'm not sure how much they see it over there at the arena. I forget the arena. Arco.
Yeah, the Oracle. Yep.
The Oracle.
No, it used to be the Oracle. It's now the Chase Center.
The Chase Center, right. I'm not going to be, you know, I'm going to go under. I really am. That's just me. Maybe you're making
I'm with you.
But,
I'm with you. I don't think they're getting 15,000 the entire series. Unless there's a ton of Celtics fans that are going to stay and say, eh, why not? It's $5 tickets. We'll go see the Red Sox and the A's. Why not? Who cares? We got a couple of cold ones and – we got until Sunday night anyway, so they might as well pass the time, right?
Yeah, maybe, right. Yeah, maybe it'll be, you know, $2 hot dog night and it'll draw fans. But you're right. That's the only reason. But and you know what? I don't care what the announced attendance is because the tickets can be sold, but I want to get a head count on each game, and I'm going under big time. Big time. Oh, great. Oh, man. I know, but we'll see. But, again, it's an ongoing story, and we'll see. Hey, win a game tonight. That's all I'm asking for them. Last time I checked, it was no score, I think, in the second. We can double-check that.
Yeah, it is no score.
That's a good sign if you're a Red Sox fan. Awesome. No score yet. Beautiful. Beautiful. All right. Without further ado, let's get to our power rankings, JC. Our top 5 this week, as we see them right now, this day, June 1st of 2022. Now, maybe not the time, but definitely this day. So, JC, you want to lead us off as we go to our Major League Baseball top 5 power rankings.
Absolutely. At number 5, I had them at a tie last week, but they're all by themselves this week. The Milwaukee Brewers, who got the luxury of, eating away at the Cubs, even though they did lose last night, but they swept them in a Memorial Day doubleheader. They are still now 32-19, first in the NL Central. And the big surprise with them is the offense is kind of keeping it together. They're pitching, you know, we knew it would be good. We didn't think it would be this good, though. Second best ERA in the NL behind the Dodgers at 3.36. So the Brewers are hanging on there. So it'll be an interesting thing the next couple of weeks if their offense can keep it up, though, because I don't think they can.
No, that's been the flaw in the Brewers. Not the flaw, but I said that's been their weakness, and they've been performed pretty above and beyond with the strong pitching. But Milwaukee Brewers are JC's 5th team in his power rankings. I'm going my number 5 team are the Astros, who are still first in the AL with a 32-18 record, 9-7 since their 11-game winning streak. They're slipping a little bit, but strong pitching has been the team's backbone thus far. You know, they rank 2nd in team ERA and are tied for 2nd in quality starts. 6 pitches with 3 or more wins, and Justin Verlander, fountain of youth, drink some more, baby. 6 wins to support his 2.03 ERA. But righty Luis Garcia sports a 2.45 ERA with 37 strikeouts in 33 innings over his last six starts. They got a pretty good rotation down there in Houston, and their hitting will come around. They're deep, and they're loaded. They got young players. We talked about it last week. The Astros are going nowhere. The Angels are floundering a little bit. The Angels may be competitive, but it's going to be between the Angels and the Astros. But I like the Astros, certainly, as my number five team in the Chiefs power rankings.
They are my number four team, the Houston Astros, and guess where they played today? They played out in Oakland in front of a spooky Wednesday crowd of 5,189. I won't even call them fans. I will call them nice people for coming out to enjoy the game. Astros get four in the ninth to top the A's, 5-4. And you're right, their pitching has really held them up. And, man, whatever Justin Verlander is drinking these days, I want some of it because he's 6-1 with an ERA under 2. They've got an AL best 2.82 ERA as a staff. They continue to do well. They had an outstanding May, 21 in Alvarez. He's just motoring off. I guess he thinks he's playing the Red Sox every day because he's got 14 home runs already. So the Astros at 33-18 are my number four team this week.
There you go. And we're going to flip-flop because my number four team are the aforementioned Milwaukee Brewers. And you talked about, 32-19, three-game lead over the second-place Cardinals, 9-5 in the last 14. And, talked about the offense, JC, and we did in the lack thereof. But if Christian Yelich can regain any of his MVP skill set, they're going to need that going down the stretch. Hunter Renfro's hit homers. They get a little more balance in their offense, but it's still not enough to compete for anything beyond a division title. So they're going to need that going into the second half, or at least Christian Yelich to regain his form. But the pitching is elite. 3.36 ERA, they're number one in strikeouts, number two in quality starts, number one in saves. But the back end of the bullpen is filthy. Josh Hader and Devin Williams have struck out 55 of the 132 batters they faced. No homers allowed. Hader has given up a measly three hits all season. With a back into the bullpen like that, you get to the sixth, seventh inning with a lead, and chances are you're going to win the games. That Brewer team is not far away from being a serious World Series contender, albeit the Dodgers are really, really good as well. But I like the Brewers, and they're my number four team in this week's Power Rankings.
Number three for me, the New York Mets and Buck Showalter keeping it together. Who needs DeGrom? Who needs Scherzer? We got Carlos Carrasco, 5-1. He's up there with Scherzer's five wins. They swept the Phillies over the weekend. They're 35-17. And at what point do you sound the alarm for the Braves? They're 10.5 behind the Mets, and they're gonna get healthier as they get further into the summer months there, and that they're going to make a move in the deadline. So, hey, spend $270, why not spend $320, if you're the Mets? So, kudos to them for keeping it together, because they could have said, hey, we're without our studs. We've got, it's just not going to happen for us, and they've just kept it going. So good for them for rebounding this past week.
Yep. I like the Mets as my number three team, too. You mentioned the 10.5 games ahead of Atlanta. They are not far away, and again, it's only June, to running away with this division. And you're looking at DeGrom, who as of May 28th is throwing long toss and said, quote-unquote, he feels completely normal. That's scary for the rest of the AL East, much less the rest of the National League, because the Mets team is loaded. They lead the league in batting average, hits and RBIs. Alfonso, Jeff McNeil, Brandon Nimmo, Francisco Lindor, getting back to that old form. Lindor has RBIs in 9 consecutive games. That's a good Met team, a good feeling Met team. There's something going on there, and Buck Showalter has rallied those troops, and maybe what the elixir that team needed, because they get Scherzer back, and they're going to. They could be comfortably leading the Atlanta Braves. That Met team is looking really strong, and they're not hard to root for. And just, being from Boston and a New York team, the Mets are not hard to root for. That's kind of fun to watch. So the Mets are looking good, and they're my number three team in this week's Power Rankings.
I'd much rather root for them than my number two team, the New York Yankees. They're 19-5 in the last 24. They're a plus 79 in run differential. And how about tonight's starter, Nasty Nestor Cortes, 4-1 with a 1.7 ERA. He has just been onions the entire season. And plus, he's just looking good with that 70s porn mustache. So it's they just keep rolling. You know, nothing seems to bother them. You know, as a staff, they got a, you know, third best ERA overall, 2.91. And they're just keeping it together. The biggest thing that, you know, is going to be their trouble is, you know, they're going to hit injuries. Stanton's already got his. They always seem to do it around, midway through the season. And Aroldis Chapman, I just don't have faith in him to continue to get it done on a consistent basis because, I mean, it was, you know, nail-biting time every time last year. Never mind another year on top of that. So, you know, if they can get, you know, not that their bullpen isn't good, because it is. It's solid. Heck, it's 1,000 times better than the Red Sox. But you wonder if that's something they kind of look to address to solidify, not only for this year, but going forward, you know, with that team. And, you know, you wonder if the Donaldson thing, you know, got the suspension, then immediately went on the injured list with COVID, then it was a little bit worse. So, you wonder at what point they say, maybe that wasn't really the right. They're the number one team in the American League right now, no doubt.
All right, my number two team this week are the Los Angeles Dodgers, 14-5 in the division, 13-4 since May 15th, albeit they're trying to avoid a sweep by our co-host Joe Foran's Pittsburgh Pirates this evening. The team leader in ERA at 2.76, an old friend, Craig Kimbrell, only 10 saves. Mookie Betts. What's going on with Mookie, JC? 15 homers and by far the league leader, I mean the team leader in home runs, but Trey Turner with a 23-game hitting streak entering tonight. The beat goes on. Must-see TV this weekend. The Dodgers host the Mets in a four-game set over the weekend. Must-see TV if you're a baseball fan because you're looking at a potential NL Championship Series preview. But the Dodgers, again, just – plus 116 a run differential. Again, number two in my power rankings in our rankings this week.
Yeah, I got them as my number one team for the second straight week. And for all the reasons that you just said, you know, they got it going on without Kershaw. And, you know, Mookie has just, you know, he had a slow start. He started chasing some balls and started, you know, really getting it up on the bat, nailing it up. Boom, 15 home runs later. You know, he's back in the groove of things. And meanwhile, we have, you know, Frenchy Cordero striking out to end the third here for the Red Sox. But, of course, no run scored. Tyler Anderson, how about them? I mean, you want to look for a guy that's, you know, stepping up for the Dodgers? 6-0, 2.90 ERA. But how about this? 48 Ks, 6 walks in 49 innings.
Jeez.
Wow.
Yeah, that's rough.
They just keep growing pitching out there, man. They're the studs until someone knocks them off.
Yep, and they won a couple more World Series. Looking at one of the better teams of our generation, no question about it. They've got to win some more, but right now they're loaded up. They're not afraid to spend money. They'll get veterans. They'll fit in piecewise, and they're in Los Angeles, not a bad place to play. And they're grooming young talent. It's all going strong there for the Dodgers. But I have the Yankees as my number one team this week. 16-8 on the road, 19-10. In the division. Pitching is top five in ERA, saves and strikeouts. Aaron Judge, again, leads the team in every major offensive category. JC, you talked about the injuries to the offense, and I think they can withstand him this year with Garrett Cole, Jordan Montgomery, and you mentioned Nestor Cortes and James Taillon. More than formidable starting rotation, but this is going to be interesting situation here with Chapman. And this may be Aaron Boone. We're going to see how good of a manager he is. Because Chapman goes down, and in comes Clay Holmes, who posted a 5.57 ERA in four seasons with, yes, Joe Foran's Pittsburgh Pirates. In 24 and two-thirds inning in the pinstripes, he's given up two walks, one run, and struck out 26 batters. Good problem to have if you're Aaron Boone. A bad problem to have if you're Aroldis Chapman. But this is where the difference may be with this Yankee team. They may have the pitching to withstand some of their offensive injuries. And if it's true, they may run and hide in this division, at least on the Boston Red Sox. But the Yankees, for the second straight week, are the number one team in my power rankings. The Going Old School Show podcast, blah, blah, blah. JC, a couple minutes left. Any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you saw the story today about Nesson and their latest rollout that, you know, if you think, you know, how the Bruins are being run and how the Red Sox are being run will drive you crazy. But Nesson throws out there today that, hey, if you're worried about your skyrocketing cable costs and too many streaming services, well, Nesson's got you taken care of, because paying $9 or $10 for Netflix or a bundle with ESPN Plus and Hulu and Disney Plus for $13 and Peacock and all that stuff, they average about $10 a month for you to watch, you know, many, many things. Nesson's got you handled, though, there, Chips. For a measly fee of $30 per month, they'll let you stream Nesson on any device you want. $30 a month, or you can pay for the whole year, and they're going to throw in 8 Red Sox tickets for you.
Wow. You talk about an offer you can't refuse, right? Are you kidding me? Is that like an insult? Is that like insulting to our intelligence a little bit, JC?
That's like a Stephanie McMahon slap across the face and a kick to the groin. That's what that is. You talk about misreading the market, just got bounced in the first round, and your baseball team blows.
And the basketball team is any competitor.
Woo, man.
Wow,
They got big ones in Nesson, man. They got big ones for trying to roll that one out there.
Is it a kind of like shoot for the moon and hope you get something smaller and it's better than what you had to start with?
Talk about getting smaller. That's exactly what they're going to get. They're going to get smaller, no doubt about it.
Goodness gracious. Hey, one thing that Nesson is, it's been a farm team for some really good broadcasting talent that has gone on to do great things in other ventures. That's for sure.
Oh, there's no question. You look at the talent that has left Nesson in the past 15 years. We can go all the way back to Hazel May,
yes,
Tina Servasio, Gary Streisky, Randy Scott. We can go up and down the list. Heidi Watney,
yep,
Jenny Dell, everybody. There's about 20 talent. Elle Duncan, she's a superstar at ESPN now. I mean, the laundry list is amazing. You know, Catherine Tappan. You know, she was at Channel 10. She was at Channel 10, not Nesson.
Yeah.
Shaley
Godwin.
Amazing. Yeah, I mean, you know, hey, and Don Arcillo heads the list.
No question. Yep. No question. So they have been the Worcester Red Sox for other venues, other broadcasts. But JC, 90 seconds left, man. Listen, always appreciate the time. It's good to talk with you. Great release. Thanks for the therapy. Thanks for your time. And always a pleasure, man. Again, you carving out an hour means a lot to me and a lot to Joe, so I appreciate it. And yeah, man, I would think he'd agree with it. So appreciate your time and appreciate you, and all the best to you and your family.
Thank you. Same to you. And, hey, congratulations to the new AEW World Heavyweight Champion, the cult of personality himself, CM Punk.
Yeah, baby. All right, man. That'll do it. Thanks to Lou from New Jersey for calling in. Thanks to each and every one of you listening. Again, the Going Old School Show, Chips, Crow, and Joe will be back with us next week, hopefully, on Blog Talk Radio. Again, 515-602-9730. Put that in your contacts. It'll always be a number for you. To each and every one of you out there, take care, be safe, stay well, and God bless, and we'll talk to you really, really soon.